Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Huvane Wealth Management Conversation today. My name is Tom Huvane, and I'm a Managing Director and Wealth Advisor here at UBS, and I'll be your host for the next 20 or so minutes. Today's topic is gender lens investing. I'm very excited to introduce Kelly Coyne, who's joining us today and is a Vice President of Global Women's Strategies at Impacts Asset Management, and oversees the firm's investment strategies and is considered an expert on impact and gender lens investing. Kelly earned a bachelor's from Trinity College and is a graduate of Wharton's Women's Leadership Program. So welcome, Kelly.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Thanks for being here today. I just mentioned the term gender lens investing, an area of specialty for you. Some folks have never heard that term. So can you tell us a little bit about what that means and why it's important?
Yes, I had never heard that term until a few years ago, even having been in this space for almost 7 years now. So that's a great place to get us started. Although gender lens investing has been in existence for a long time, the term came about as it started to get more popular, and I consider it to be a subset of impact investing or a focus area of impact investing. And just like impact investing is somewhat up for interpretation by the person that is doing the investing, so is gender lens. But what we typically mean by saying you are applying a gender lens is that when you're investing your money, you're intentionally addressing gender inequality issues or looking to promote equality proactively. And there's a couple of ways that people tend to do this, which often is by investing in women-owned or led companies, by investing in companies that make products that benefit the lives of women and girls. And then often it's by investing in companies that promote workplace equality, that have women well represented in leadership positions, and just overall have a strong commitment to equality, closing any gender gaps, and creating a culture of inclusion. And that's really how we think about it at Impacts and how we apply a gender lens. We're looking at the largest companies in the world. We're collecting data on those companies and evaluating them on gender related issues and factors. So that looks like evaluating the board of directors, their management team, what percent of women hold those positions, you know, does the company disclose pay equity ratios, and so forth. So that's our gender lens, and we do that at Impacts, not because it's nice to do, frankly, it is nice to do, but we're doing that because it's simply smart investing, and we can get into the research that kind of backs that up.
Sure. I mean, I like that idea of it. It is smart investing. And when I'm in conversations with clients, whether it's men or women, and we talk about gender lens investing, you know, just on the face of it, they tend to nod, understand, yes, this certainly makes sense. You know, why would it not make sense? But can you share some of the more empirical evidence behind this and investing in these companies with gender diversity?
Sure, and I'm glad to hear that in your conversations, people tend to get it. You know, I think on the outset, it probably makes sense. I know a lot of people I talk to just assume that these kind of large companies that we're looking at, like, you know, Microsoft or, you know, Xerox or something, you know, that of course there's women at the top, right? Like, sometimes it's surprising to people when there is not women or other kinds of diversity well represented. So, you know, we had to go to the research because, again, you know, we think this is smart, but what backs that up? Where's the evidence? And frankly, there's a ton that links companies' performance with higher numbers of women in these leadership positions. And I could all go into that, but I want to make it clear that the research isn't suggesting women are making better decisions. The research really says that companies perform better when the diverse groups are in place and they make better decisions as a whole. So to all the guys out there, we're not saying that we don't need you. We do.
Right.
The diversity is, is the power. We wouldn't actually want to own a company that had all women in charge, because you'd lose that benefit. So what the research tells us, and this is research from, God, you name it, Harvard, McKinsey, Credit Suisse, it's robust. I think we cite over like 70 different reports, and it's very conclusive. What the research is saying is that companies with greater gender balance in leadership and use the talents really of the entire workforce, they have better decision-making and oversight. They have better management. These companies are more innovative. They have better human resource management, which leads to higher employee satisfaction and productivity. And then on the flip side, what it tells us, which is really interesting, is when the companies do not proactively embrace diversity and equality, and they have a culture perhaps that enables or ignores discrimination and harassment, they're actually putting themselves at a very clear disadvantage. They will not be able to attract and retain the best workforce out there. Their employee productivity and morale can suffer, and there could be reputational and even legal risks that could arise. So of course, that's going to hurt a company's performance. So it's both on the flip side, there's factors that are leading to companies performing better, and then by not having diversity, it's leading to companies potentially suffering from a performance standpoint.
Right.
And I can put this in a present day context, because I was just talking to a woman on my research team that's kind of the brains behind the whole operation, and she was talking about how there is mounting evidence that women, you know, which hopefully we're all familiar with, probably have heard of, you know, they're bearing this disproportionate impact of the pandemic and challenging their economic participation and advancement in the workforce. That's kind of what's taken place, as we know. Yet some of the qualities and the characteristics of these diverse and inclusive companies will be much in need as companies recover from this crisis, right? So if women are leaving the workforce as a result of the impact of COVID, these companies stand to lose even more as they try to recover from the crisis. So I think that's kind of interesting. McKinsey has done some really great research if anybody wants to dive in on that piece.
Sure. Yeah, it feels that, you know, the more diverse the workplace that you have, certainly will correlate with better company performance.
Yeah, it does. And I mean, you were on, you know, we've been talking about this, you and I, Tom, for years. I feel like you were an early adopter and a fan of gender lens investing even before it was as popular as it is today. So I think that you're very familiar with everything that I've stated.
Yes. I was an early adopter of gender lens investing, and you and your company were actually very helpful in filling in the gaps in my education. And what was very interesting for our practice is that about a decade ago, we had made a significant pivot in our practice to focus on women investors, and we embarked on a journey to really learn more about the financial needs of our women clients and how our women clients think about their investments and also how they make financial decisions. And, you know, I discovered that it's not whether men make better decisions than women or vice versa. It's just they make different decisions. And just as you said earlier, having that diverse decision-making on a board, for example, or in senior management, you know, really seems to have a better outcome. And it also wasn't that our women clients were more risk-averse than men. What our women clients were is they were more risk-aware. Right, so they wanted to understand the risks more. It's not that they weren't willing to take a risk. They just wanted to be more educated on the risk they were taking. So taking the time to understand these subtle differences has really helped us when we're working with our women investors. So it's been really insightful. And then just an offshoot of that, and to continue that conversation, many women said, well, you know, are there ways that I can invest in in women? And really, there were not, you know, going back a couple of years ago, there really were no real direct ways to invest other than, you know, with a company like yours. So that really became, really kind of eye-opening to me at the time. You know, but getting back to the investments for a quick minute, you and I talk from time to time about companies that could make that list of portfolio. Can you give us kind of a big picture example of a gender leadership company that that is in the portfolio and tell us the story there?
Yeah, I'd be happy to. And I think you were just spot on with, you know, women as investors. That's definitely my experience, and I think it makes a lot of sense to customize their experience with you and your team at your practice. For us at Impax, we're looking at, I think I mentioned at the outset, some of the largest companies in the world. So we're investing in about 400 large cap names. So I could go on and on, but I won't. And one example that I was thinking about prior to the call that I think we all know well, and if you're like me, visit way too often, is Starbucks. So Starbucks would maybe immediately come to mind as a gender leadership company, right? But it is, and it's one that's continuously getting better over time when we look at their gender profile. So I can give you a snapshot just into what that looks like. Women comprise 38% of their board of directors and 50% of their executive management team. So that's well above average.
Wow.
Give you guys just a little bit of a base. For some of us, we're like, yeah, 38% and 50%, like that's close to parity, right? They're far and away, you know, above peers of their size. And in the U.S. specifically, Starbucks has achieved 100% pay equity for their women and men and individuals of all races who are performing similar work. So they have created a set of pay equity principles and best practices, and they're actually sharing them with other companies to encourage progress, you know, across the board for women, not just in the U.S. actually, but around the world too. So they're just, you know, a real leading example of a company that's doing things well from a pay equity standpoint and then having a trickle-down effect where, you know, companies looking up to a company like Starbucks is saying, hey, I should be doing that too. And they've also set some goals, company goals, which I think is really important, and we're seeing other companies do similar things to achieve even greater diversity. So they're being public with them. So they're saying that they want women to comprise 50% of their senior leadership team in the next few years. So this is just, you know, a great example of a company that's doing it well, still trying to get better, still trying to do more, and then being very transparent. That's a really key part of the, you know, being transparent. They don't have to disclose this information. It's not required. So we just think they're just somebody to talk about.
Wow, that's a really great example. And I, you know, just kind of thinking as you're speaking about it, and thinking about the decision making at a company like Starbucks, when the pandemic first began back in 2020 or even into as early as 19 in China where it began, Starbucks was one, had a huge operation in China, and were able to get through the pandemic from the lessons they had learned. And when the pandemic came here to the United States, they were able to take those lessons that they learned and that education, that great decision making, and bring that here to the United States. And one of the first companies to actually start emerging from the pandemic in their stores and, you know, with their employees. So I think that was just a great example of you know, decision making that really helped them get through, you know, the worst part of this. And the results are there. You know, Starbucks, you know, stock, if you look at their performance even in the last several months, you know, has been spectacular. But if you look at them even over a longer term period, if you look at them over the last year, you know, double digit returns and probably 20% returns over many, many years and hopefully many to come. So that's a really great example. And thanks for bringing that one up. You know, this is such an important area of investing right now. And, you know, we hope it gains a lot more attention. And it seems like the events of 2020, Kelly, has really been a catalyst for this type of investing. You know, why is it so important now, especially, you know, since we've come through the brunt of this pandemic? Why is it so important now?
Yeah, that's a great question. And one I've been thinking a lot about. I've been in the space for many years, and there is this general uptick, you know, in interest and in putting dollars behind these kind of investments. And I think the pandemic, the demand for social justice and equality, you know, last year, they've been stark reminders of the inequality that exists and has existed for a long time, whether that's, you know, gender, racial, wealth, and income, you know, just there's been a skew, you know, in favor of white men. And I think that we're in the midst of a real-time example of how inequality can affect the lives of all of us, of workers, mm-hmm. affects how companies are responding to these kind of issues. And we're at an inflection point that to me is encouraging, similar to when Me Too and Time's Up, those movements kind of galvanized a national conversation around gender. We're at that. And I'm excited to see where this goes. I think already there's been billions of dollars flowing into the gender lens investing space. To me, that's really validating that this is a investment concept that works. I don't think people would be putting their dollars behind products that, you know, aren't performing well for them. So it's a strong investment concept, and that the investor demand is there. You know, they want to find a way to make some positive changes in the world. And one way that people can do that, right, is through their portfolio and through investing.
Yep.
And so talking, you know, to you, Tom, or, you know, your advisor, or your family, and saying, you know, what is the impact that we want to have? What are the changes that we, you know, are fighting for, you know, maybe in our free time or socially that we could align our portfolios with? And more people are having that conversation as a result of what's gone on this past year. And I think, I mean, Tom, you tell me, have you been sort of having these kinds of conversations, you know, with your clients and helping women and families kind of think through some of this uncertainty from the past year and, you know, helping them find solutions that they're looking for? I'm sure you have tons of stories there.
Oh, sure. I mean, our clients, men and women, but women in particular, are so many of our client women clients are frontline workers. You know, some of them mm-hmm. are doctors, and, you know, my wife is a nurse practitioner, and, you know, I've seen from her perspective what the last 12 months has really been like. Many of our clients are entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs, who had some financial difficulties with their businesses, and, you know, we were able to help them with things like the Paycheck Protection Program, the PPP, as some folks may have heard about. You know, we've helped them with those types of connections and helping them get that funding. And then, you know, there are those that are maybe not frontline workers, but are working from home, taking care of their children, and at the same time, their parents. So we've been able to remove those financial stresses by going back and updating their financial plans and assuring them that, you know, we will all get through this challenging time and we'll come out of it with more confidence to face the next challenge. And so having that plan in place, knowing where they're going and knowing that, you know, over a period of time, this event may turn out to be transient, we hope it is, and that we will come out of it stronger and in better shape. So I think that's been helpful to them to be able to take that financial challenge off their plate and let them spend their time focusing on other areas of their life that are certainly demanding a lot of attention. So, Kelly, you know, I like to, you know, end these conversations with, you know, some kind of personal note or story, you know, from our speaker. And, you know, I know that at the very start of the pandemic, you had your first baby. So congratulations for that. And since then you've come back to work, obviously. Tell us what that experience has been like. What was it like the last 12 or so months and going through all that? I'm sure it wasn't something you had planned to do, but you know, you had to deal with it. And you know, how did you face those challenges? What was your experience?
Yeah, it was an interesting time to say the least. You remember all the way back to mid to late March, right, when things really started to get intense with COVID. That was exactly when I was due, actually. And so every day sort of felt like doomsday. Remember that? Like you're watching the news
nonstop.
And you're just like, wait, tomorrow is the last day. it was intense and scary, and maybe I should be watching too much CNN. I don't know. But, you know, I was going, you know, talking to my doctors all the time. You know, the hospitals weren't allowing a lot of visitors. You know, I'm sure you heard a lot of this being in New York, Tom, is that, you know, at some point they weren't even letting, you know, the fathers or the partners in with women who were delivering. So that was that time that I was in. So it was scary, to say the least. But, you know, luckily my daughter was born the first week in April, and everything went well. And, you know, minus the grandparents and family not being able to visit for a while, it actually wasn't a horrible time to kind of hunker down and raise a kid these last few months.
Right.
Not much else to do. And then, yeah, coming back to work was interesting. Because I talk about this for a living, everything that we've been talking about so far today, I was living it, right, too. Like, is the company being flexible? You know, how is it managing home life, pandemic? We had to quarantine for 2 weeks. It was the nightmare, you know? And I felt like I'm pretty lucky. My company was incredibly flexible with me when we did have to quarantine without, you know, a nanny or any help for 2 weeks. I planned to take vacation. They said, absolutely not. Do what you can. I think, you know, that makes my situation very lucky. I think a lot of other women and families have not been in that situation where their companies were as flexible. So it's really showing me as a real-time example how important this stuff is we're talking about, you know, when we're looking at companies and seeing what kind of policies they have in place. So yeah, it's been an interesting 10 months. I see the light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully. I don't know, right? Do you think we're almost through this? But it's been
a good
silver lining, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, when you go through the teenage years, you know, you'll look back on this as the easy times. You know, so that'll be a lot of fun for you.
I'll call you when
plenty
you're
of time
13
ahead.
And yeah. And see what did I get myself into?
Yes, it'll always be a lot of fun. You'll figure it out. So Kelly, thank you very much today for sharing your tremendous insights with us on Gender Lens Investing. This has really been a treat, and hopefully I feel that our clients and investors will feel a little bit smarter when they after they listen to this call. And for those of you with any questions, or if you'd like to continue this conversation, you can reach our team at ubs.com/team/Huvane. So thank you all today for your time, and we look forward to the next conversation.